Welcome to HCS Talks. I'm your host, Superintendent of Hampton City Schools, Raymond Haynes. This is our second season of our Hampton City Schools podcast, HCS Talks. Our aim is to educate, inform, and entertain not only our local community, but also our listeners and beyond. Each episode explores a range of topics, including education, student achievement, and the efforts of our teachers, support staff, parents, and community partners. We will also highlight various community members, programs, initiatives, and more, providing valuable and insightful content for everyone. To our loyal listeners, thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time listening to our podcast, thank you for joining us. We hope you will stay tuned and continue listening to HCS Talks. Today, I have the opportunity to sit down with Mr. Ron Peterson, a best-selling author and an alumni of Hampton City Schools. So thank you, Mr. Peterson, for joining us. Before we begin, would you please tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself?
Well, thank you, Dr. Haynes. It's great to be here. I was born and raised in Hampton, grew up in the Northampton area, and the schools I attended, I went to Kraft Elementary School and what's now Tarrant Middle School, and then Bethel High School, graduated in 1983. So Hampton born and raised, and Bethel High graduate through and through. And from there, went to Radford University and graduated from Radford in 1988. I played baseball in high school and at Radford there. So was an NCAA athlete for a period of time.
Wow.
And yeah, and was a journalism major at Radford, and was how I initially got into writing. Let's see, my wife is Kathy. A lot of folks know her from the YMCA. She worked at the Hampton Y for many years and then was the director of the YMCA over in Smithfield. And then we have two kids, one Brooks, who's a William & Mary graduate and lives in New York City. And then our daughter, Trudy, recently graduated from JMU, was a special ed major, and is now in grad school getting her master's. So,
master's in what?
In special education and curriculum administration.
So she has aspirations of becoming a what?
Of teaching special ed.
So, in Hampton City Schools.
Let's hope. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, indeed.
We certainly are going to do our best to recruit her as well. So journalism, Mr. Peterson, were you always interested in journalism? Did you do a lot of writing in elementary, junior high, and high school?
I did not, and is a great story about how I originally got involved in that. I'd say, you know, all through schools, through elementary school, middle school, and high school, I was probably a mediocre student. You know, was a B or C student, and academically really wasn't passionate about anything. You know, shame to say, there were times in courses like math and science where I did just enough to get by.
Right,
and but did pretty well in English, you know, in terms of reading and writing. Was
so
probably
it came naturally to you.
Yes, sir. Yeah, more than the other subjects. And my junior year at Bethel High School, I had a teacher named Helen Darnell, an English teacher. And there was one day we turned in a writing assignment, a paper, and she asked me to stay after class, and I thought I was in trouble. So the bell rang, and everyone left, and I kind of went to her desk sort of sheepishly. And she said, has anyone ever told you you're a good writer? And I said, you know, well, matter of fact, you know, no, they haven't. Which actually I think they had, but, you know, hadn't made that directive a point. Mm-hmm. She said, well, you are, and I'd like for you to write for the student newspaper. And there was a school newspaper at Bethel. It was called Bear Facts. And
still is.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And so I said, hey, sounds great to me. So I went to the meeting. She was actually the sponsor of the newspaper, and that was how she recruited a lot of the writers who were involved with it. And I learned I had a love for sports, you know, and a love for baseball. And I learned that, you know, I could combine that with my writing ability and be a sports writer. Mm-hmm. And so I did that. And then my senior year was a sports editor of the newspaper and covered, you know, all the sports that depending on whatever sport was in season. And enjoyed it, you know, continued to make my better grades in English. And that was when college really first came on my radar. My parents had always encouraged me to go to college, but I had no idea what I wanted to major in. But learned that, you know, that I could major in journalism, mm-hmm. and went to Radford University and was very fortunate. Radford just happened to be starting a baseball program. So I kind of got in on that on the ground floor. They got much, much better in later years, and I wouldn't have been good enough to play. But the first year of the program, fortunately, I was. And so at Radford, similar thing. I wrote for the newspaper my senior year there. I was sports editor and worked in the public relations department, actually in a paid job there, and in sports information was kind of my first paid writing gig. And then career-wise, sort of got sidetracked from writing over the course of my career. Mm-hmm. And then over the last 7-8 years or so, I've kind of circled back to that and written actually 4 books. So.
Wow. Yeah. So you mentioned, Mr. Peterson, that the spark came from Ms. Darnell calling you back or having you stay back after class and giving you some insight on how well of a writer you were. So you had the best of both worlds in college and high school because you were able to stay with your passion of playing baseball as well as what you were good at in writing. So you became a sports editor at Bethel and at Radford University. So that's quite impressive. Let me ask you this. Were you any good at baseball when you were in high school?
I'd say I was barely good, but I draw the line at good, and I certainly wasn't very good. But I loved the game, and I think made the most out of the ability that I had. And it's great. You know, the good thing about it, you look back at sports, you know, years later, probably as you have, and
yes.
It's the friendships that you made.
Yes.
And, I may talk a little later about some of the coaches and just some of the things that they shared that have stuck with me to this day.
You know?
And so for me, that was the great part of being involved in sports, as I'm sure so many people find
out.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sure that you are making the Bethel community proud right now. They have adopted the motto since you've been gone of being the home of academic excellence, but they are still the powerful Bruins and still have the Bear Facts as part of their newspaper as well. So certainly giving some nice shout-outs to Bethel High School and the Hampton community. And we're very proud that you are a Hampton City Schools graduate as well. So throughout your time at Radford, did you always know you wanted to major in journalism, or did you go back and forth between a major, or how did that work for you?
I did from day one. That was my major, so I have had a pretty specific path with that there. Although I took other courses, in business management or marketing, and as you do in college, just other courses as well. But I did knew that was what I wanted to do, and then I mentioned getting sidetracked career wise. But I wrote. I was a sports writer for a while, and then did a lot of freelance writing. And then one point was working in a newspaper environment and became interested in advertising there. And maybe it was I saw some of the advertising sales reps, wearing the nice suits and driving nice cars. And maybe that was what interested me. But so I worked in newspaper advertising and then eventually probably most of my career in television advertising. You know, the television ads you see, I helped produce and actually sell those. And then my writing background, I do a lot of what's called copywriting, where I would write the advertising script. And, there was certainly a market for those kind of skills in that line of work. And then it was about the time I turned 50, which was about 9 years ago, I was still dabbling in writing. But I said, hey, one of those bucket list goals, I wanted to write a book. And that was when I really sat down and got serious about it.
Wow. So you mentioned television advertising. Is there a particular ad that sort of resonates with you the most, or one that the audience would know about?
Most of the ones I did were more local, not as professional as what you'd see, for example, in the Super Bowl.
Right.
But I guess, so many of those, I mentioned Super Bowl advertising, television commercials. We sit and we're interested in the game, but we also like to see the commercials, the creativity of that.
Yes.
So I can think about half a dozen of those over the years that have really stuck with me that I've really enjoyed.
Wow. So, Mr. Peterson, how do you think your background in the Hampton area influenced your writing or influences your writing? And do you incorporate local stories or issues into your work?
I do indeed. And you know, as far as the influence, you know, so often I think when you're young, there's things that you're exposed to that you don't realize what a positive influence it has, you know. And I mentioned sports in high school, and we've been, you know, I was class of 1983, and we've had a class reunion about every 5 years, and I've gone to all those and been involved with them and made a point to stay in touch with a lot of my classmates. And I've come to realize, you know, there were in school, you know, there's all different activities that people get involved in. And I think back in my days, you know, there were folks who were very involved in band. You know, we have some great band programs, or maybe chorus or choir, and even folks in drama. And then some of the more specific, you know, like, say, business-oriented clubs that they're involved in. And I realized what a big influence that had on a lot of other people who pursued career paths. ROTC, all of our schools have those. And some of the most successful people in my graduating class were folks who pursued careers in the military and did, you know, did extremely well in the military and then also in their post-military years. But for me, some of the influences I think of, and it was interesting, it seemed like every school had a coach who was larger than life in terms of, you know, just their presence and their principles that they coached by, and also their success. You know, at Hampton, it might have been Mike Smith. I know you're a Phoebus alum. Yes. I remember there was Mike Talon, who coached girls basketball, Lakeisha Frett back in the day, and then Bill Dee in football, and then at Kickitan, Buddy Denton, who passed away recently. And at Bethel, that was a guy named Dennis Kozlowski, who coached football. And it seemed like a lot of the other coaches kind of picked up on some of his concepts. And one of those I recall was goal setting. And, you know, there were always, you know, coaches would talk about not only having goals, but having written goals, and something in the act of writing the goal down, you know, makes you a lot more likely to accomplish it. So, you know, I do recall that, and that having an influence on me throughout my life, you know, someone with a goal rather than someone who kind of just sort of just wanders, you know, through life, as well as just, I recall hearing a baseball coach, Skip Bouchard, talk about enjoying the moment.
You know?
And you hear that a lot in sports or any activity nowadays, but not taking anything for granted, not looking ahead, but kind of enjoying the moment you're in.
Some great points. It lets folks really know that you are a Hamptonian, just based on the local coaches and celebs around here that you're able to name just right off the tip of your tongue. And those folks have definitely made a tremendously positive impact in the community here as well. So I understand that, and you mentioned 4 books. So are you on number 5, or is it 4 right now?
Yes, sir. I am. I'm working on number 5. And yes, indeed.
All right. So I understand that while writing your first book, that you formed some long-lasting relationships with several law enforcement officers. Can you share your research process for writing true crime stories?
I sure will. And yeah, I'm glad you brought up true crime. The books I've written are in what we call the genre of true crime.
Okay.
And that is, they are, the 3 of the 4 books are murder mysteries. And I know this, you know, generally we talk about positive things on your podcast, and this can be kind of a dark subject. And some of that subject matter is, I try to approach it in a way that is maybe a bit more positive. Having said that, the first book I wrote was called Under the Trestle, and it was about a really fascinating missing person case that happened in 1980, where I went to college at Radford University, where a student, a girl named Gina Hall, disappeared. She went out to a nightclub, went dancing one night, and then was never seen again back in June of 1980. And there was a suspect in her disappearance, and the evidence seemed to, remember, this would have been pre-DNA back in 1980, but the evidence indicated that she had been murdered, and the suspect was a guy named Steve Epperly, who happened to be a Virginia Tech football player, and he was convicted in her murder, first-degree murder, and it was one of the first times in the country that someone was convicted of murder without the victim's body.
Right.
I'd always been amazed by that. And, you know, I didn't think that someone could even be charged with murder without the body of the victim.
Right.
So when it, you know, it came to writing a book, I had a literary agent tell me that true crime was really popular. And I knew that case was one that I wanted to write about. that would really be a marketable book that might appeal to a lot of people. You know, as I said, we all generally, we like murder mysteries. Those make really popular movies and books and, you know, a lot of the most successful ones. So I set out to talk to the detectives and investigators and prosecuting attorney who worked that case over 40 years ago, you know, back in 1980. And became very good friends with a few of them. One was Everett Shockley. He was the prosecutor in Pulaski County out in the western part of the state who had the, you know, the guts to prosecute this case without a body, which, again, it had actually never been done in Virginia. And then the investigator, who was a state trooper, who since passed away, his name was Austin Hall. And so they both shared with me all the information about the case, some of the case file information, and then told me who else to talk to in terms of who to interview. And then by the time I was done, I'd interviewed about 100 people that were involved in one way or another with this fascinating, really compelling case. And I was able to tell the story chronologically from beginning to end on what happened. And the book did really, really well, you know, for being a first book. It was a bestseller. And I sold the documentary film rights to a film producer, McTavish Pictures. So it's currently in development as a movie there.
But, it is?
It is indeed. Yeah. It's a documentary movie. This won't be a studio movie, you know, like you'd see it. But yeah, we're working, you know, these days on the streaming services, you know, Netflix and Amazon and Hulu, you know, documentary films have become increasingly popular.
Oh, yes, they have. So you know which one of the streaming services it will air on, or have they given you details about that yet?
We don't know that yet. Yeah, we're still having conversations with those folks. But I guess going back to, you know, what your initial questions, so those relationships that I met in the course of writing that book have really helped me with other books, you know, as I've picked a case to write about, you know, just, they've sort of helped me along the way, made the introductions that I've needed, and certainly being able to use them as a reference has really helped in that regard.
So that sort of leads into my next question. How do you choose which true crime cases to write about? And are there specific criteria that you actually look for?
I'd say in terms of specific criteria, you know, just a story that's compelling. You know, I'll learn about it and then sort of just give a, for lack of a better word, an elevator pitch to somebody. And if someone is really interested, you know, the people I know around me, if they're really interested in it, then I'll be like, okay, that would be a good subject to write about. On the other hand, if I get just kind of blank looks, I'll be like, okay, maybe that's not as interesting as I would think it
right,
is.
Right.
So, you know, it would be that. And then having the access and having the, you know, I mentioned the investigators who worked on the case, or the attorneys that prosecuted it, or attorneys who defended, you know, the person that was accused of the crime.
Right.
Having access to them. You know, I've written about things that happened back in the 1980s, and I find that most folks, if they're still around who were directly involved, they're willing to talk about it. Just the passage of time has made them more willing to do that. Whereas if I tried to write about a current case that was still active or still open, they wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't want to talk to some writer about it. You know?
No, so, they wouldn't.
Yes, sir.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So do you have a particular story, a book that you're most proud of, and what makes it special to you?
You know, I'd say the risk of being too long-winded here, I guess the most two recent books that I've written, one that was released a few years back, it was called Eyes of a Monster. It was about a series of murders that happened here in Hampton back in the 1980s. These were unsolved murders that just had never been solved back in the late 70s and 1980s, three murders. And then in the early, in about 2011, a Hampton police detective named Randy Mayer reopened the search in one of those cases and managed to link them. He identified a suspect and then charged that person with murder about 35 years after, you know, after the murder. So the book is about that story, and it's a local story. I think folks in Hampton would find that interesting. Again, it's called Eyes of a Monster. And then the other one of my four books would probably be the most recent one. It's called In the Wind. And I was introduced by a mutual friend to a woman named Kay Lewis Shucker, who's now 81 years old. And back in the 1970s and 80s, she was one of the first female police detectives, you know, back when law enforcement was strictly a man's world, as was detective work.
Right.
And so she faced a lot of, you know, a lot of battles. She was really a trailblazer. She was discriminated against. She was harassed on the job. And
what's her name again?
Her name is Kay Lewis Shucker. And so along with her, I wrote the book about her, you know, the early chapters were about her trials and tribulations, you know, trying to make it as a woman in a man's world. And then in 1981, you know, right nearby in Norfolk, Virginia, there was an Old Dominion University student who went missing. And Detective Kay was a lead investigator in that case. Case had a lot of challenges, and she just did an incredible job. And over a period of months, eventually was able to solve the case and to bring justice. And so this is her story, one about her career, but also about her her work on this one specific case that was just a fascinating case, took a lot of twists and turns. And then the television rights to that book were recently acquired here over the last month by the Oxygen Television Network.
Okay.
And it will air.
Another documentary.
Yes, sir. All right. Yeah. And that one we've already done interviews for, of all the key people that were involved, and then and myself sort of narrating the story. And it will air next summer on the Oxygen Network. So that was very exciting as well. And is always good, you know, as an author, when if your books are adapted either for television or a movie, you know, that's kind of a great thing.
So will the documentaries have the same title as the book?
You know, as of right now, I don't know. It'll air as part of a series that Oxygen runs.
Okay.
As a standalone episode. You know, and very often they may title it something different than what, you know, what my book was. And my book will be referenced during it.
Okay.
And then I was interviewed for it. But yeah, that's a good question. Yeah.
But it has to be rewarding, even in writing the true crimes, when you're seeing that justice has taken place as well.
It is indeed. Yeah. And, you know, when I started writing, I mean, I always respected law enforcement and, you know, officers and detectives. But as far as the job they did, you know, we see it portrayed sometimes on television. Sometimes it's not in a flattering light. Other times it is. But it made me, you know, I mentioned the Hampton book, just, you know, how hard the law enforcement officers here work.
Right.
And then especially the, you know, the detectives. If you're a detective, and, you know, let's say it's a Friday of a holiday weekend and you've got a weekend plan with your family, and heaven forbid if there's a murder, you know, you're working all weekend. You
right.
know, very often
right.
you're not getting much sleep. You know, you're drinking coffee to stay awake
right.
and working on that murder. So I've been able to share those stories and had them shared with me firsthand. That's given me just a great deal of respect and admiration, you know, for the work they do to make all of us safer.
Absolutely. And nice. Shout out to our Hampton Police Division as well. We have a very strong and collaborative working relationship with the police department and ensuring our community and schools are safe. So I echo those sentiments in terms of the respect and regard we have for police and detective work as well. So, Mr. Peterson, what are some of the biggest challenges you face when writing about real crimes?
Well, I guess the, you know, the one general thing, we've all heard of writer's block,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I'm certainly not immune to that. And we all, you know, anyone who's ever written, whether you're doing it professionally or you're a high school student, you know, writing a term paper, it's, you know, there are times when the words just don't make it from your head onto paper or onto
right.
the keyboard. And, you know, I'm no different than that. So that's always a challenge, you know, and I'll try to do things, maybe go to a different place, you know, to write a different setting, to actually sit down, you know, and write. Or sometimes, you know, once you just start writing, the initial things you compose are not very good, but then you kind of bridge the gap and you get better as you go. So I guess like anything, you know, it's taking that first step that, you know, that does it. So that's a challenge. Then one of the kind of unique challenges, I mentioned I write a lot about cold cases, and, you know, it just so happens that, you know, several of them happened in the 1980s, is that, you know, I'll interview a handful of people who were involved, and all of them will share slightly different stories about what happened. You know, sometimes diametrically opposed. So, you know, I try to share each of their viewpoints. And then, like most things, you know, the truth probably was somewhere in the middle or some variation of what they recalled. But it makes you realize, you know, over the course of many, many years and decades, you know, how our memories tend to drift a little bit, or even, you know, a lot of times might even be inaccurate or,
right,
you know, have varied from the truth. So that's always been a challenge. And I've sensed sometimes that some of the things that I've written, I find out later that wasn't exactly what happened, you know.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
But even as experienced as you are and having written 4 books.
Yes, sir.
You still get writer's block.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
So what advice, you know, we have, I'm not sure if Dr. Caggiano has shared with you, we have what we call academies now at the high school. So young people can select from one of 16 academies and 44 pathways. It's sort of kind of like a pre-college or pre-career experience where they're actually immersed in a particular career that they may be interested in. So one of our academies is the Academy of the Performing Arts, where young people who may be interested in becoming an actor or an actress, and even from the lens of being a writer as well. So you have a lot of young people who are interested in writing and part of the production in that process. So what advice would you give to young people or students who are aspiring writers who want to enter, I guess, sort of kind of the true crime genre or just writing in general?
Yes, yes. I would say, you know, just to write as often as you can. And this is sort of a general, maybe opinion I have, but, you know, with text messaging, you know, so much now, you know, as text messaging has gotten more and more informal, you know, quite often we don't capitalize, we don't use punctuation,
right,
we use abbreviations, and it, to some degree, it's made all of us kind of regress in our writing skills. So
it has.
It has indeed. So, you know, I would say, you know, keep working on those writing skills and sharpening them. And it's always interesting to me, and, you know, I have the opinion that no matter what career path you do, you know, whether you're a teacher or a principal or a doctor or attorney, if you're a good writer and have good writing skills and can express, you know, your thoughts in writing, you know, that's going to help you in your career stand out among other people maybe who don't write as well as you.
It most certainly will.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
It most certainly will.
So that would, I guess that's probably not a direct answer to your question, but, you know, that's one of the things I try to tell younger folks and even my own kids, you know, when I see their just how informal they get with texting me sometimes, you know, I'm like,
do you find yourself when you're texting back writing incomplete sentences and using the appropriate punctuation?
Probably more than I should. Yeah, I not with my wife. We're still pretty informal, but yeah, so often I do, but that's funny. Yeah.
I know you've given us a sneak peek of upcoming projects or topics. Anything else you want the listening audience to know in terms of additional upcoming projects or something you're excited to explore at this point?
Well, I'm in the early stages of another book, and it's another true crime story. It's about a state prosecutor who was a special prosecutor who would prosecute serious felonies, worked at the state level out of Richmond, and then would come to localities, you know, where a local prosecutor needs help. But anyway, I'm working on that book now, and it's probably in the early stages where I really can't elaborate too much, you know. All right. But other than to say it's, you know, it should be another great story and another person who I've been very fortunate to have been introduced to, and, you know, to be able to tell this person's story. But I guess I'd say, you know, that I mentioned the two of the film projects are still a little ways away from making it to it will be a television screen again, but not a movie screen, although the one on Oxygen will air next summer.
So that's two in addition to the one that's airing on Oxygen, or is Oxygen,
yes, sir,
included in that?
Mm-hmm. Yes,
so
sir.
So three altogether.
That's correct.
All right.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And then all of my books are available, you know, on at Barnes & Noble, or nowadays most folks get their books on Amazon. And then there's also, you know, audiobooks have become more and more popular. And I find that's the way that I do a lot of a lot of my reading, you know, I'll listen to an audio book. For example, when I was driving here, I've got the Audible app. You know, you can listen to a book in your car, and that commuting time, instead of listening to the radio, you know, you can make the most of it. Or if I'm out walking the dog, you know, but this morning I walked for about 45 minutes and was able to listen to part of a book.
It's one of my favorite apps. And like you said, driving, if you're driving 3, 4, 5 hours listening to a book, or even walking or riding the bike. So is it your voice in the audiobooks as well?
It's not. No, it's a professional narrator. Okay. So I had a company that produces that, has a professional voice actor who voices the book, who does a really, really good job. So yes, all my books are available on Audible, you know, for folks maybe who wouldn't read the paper copy or the ebook copy. And then I'd say, you know, just as you and I were talking about, for anyone, I have so many people who say, gosh, I wish I had time to read. And they probably don't have time to read, you know, an actual book with, you know, on paper. But, you know, I think if they'd explore these audiobook apps like Audible, you know, they'd find that they might have a little more time to read or to consume books, I should say.
I've been able to listen to multiple books at a time. I may listen to one while I'm walking 2 or 3 miles up one way and then start on another. But it has been very beneficial for me, and I've enjoyed the actual Audible app that you mentioned as well. But looking forward to reading some more of your books. I did get to read one in particular. I think that was The Eyes of a Monster. But just enjoying that from the perspective of actually knowing about the locality and some of the people that you're mentioning in the books. Actually knowing a lot of those folks firsthand makes it even more interesting for me as well. So folks in this local area will certainly benefit from all you have produced and written as well. And I certainly thank you for your time today. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
No, thank you. I think we, you know, we covered it pretty well. I know I've talked about myself a lot of the time here, but, you know, I'm just in admiration, you know, the job that you do here with Hampton City Schools.
Thank you so much.
Oh, absolutely. And so having known so many people, you know, not only teachers, but the folks that work in administration and higher up, you know, just an awesome job that you all do here, and what a, you know, what a great place Hampton is to go to school.
Yes, sir. I thank you for saying that. Being a best-selling author and a graduate of our own Hampton City Schools, Bethel High School Bruin, and having attended Kraft Elementary, home of the Cubs, and now Tarrant Middle School. I'm not going to let you lose sight of the fact that you've mentioned to us about your daughter. What's her name, the one that said, William and Mary?
Her name is Trudy.
Trudy. Trudy should look to choose Hampton, and I want you to work on that for us. Being a Hamptonian yourself, I think you owe it to us, Mr. Peterson, for her to at least consider the great city of Hampton and Hampton City Schools as well.
I'll make sure she does, and I'll definitely encourage her to do that. I sure will.
Thank you so much. Thank you for being here today and sharing your experiences. I've enjoyed every minute talking with you. I'm certain our listeners have enjoyed you as well. So, and to our listeners, remember, education is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world. As one community, one transformation, we will ensure academic excellence for every child, every day, whatever it takes. We will catch you next week.
Listen to learn more about Hampton City Schools. New episodes of HCS Talks drop on Thursdays. Subscribe and listen to HCS Talks. HCS Talks is a Hampton City Schools production.